just a friend.
Just a friend.
You say he's just a friend. Dwayne Turner, you got what I need. And welcome back, everyone, to week number 2 of Sports from the 6. I'm your co-host, Ali Khan Ravjani, alongside, as always, the lovely and talented Dwayne, flashier than 2 Chainz Turner, and Flip. Saunders ain't got nothing on me, Livingstone.
Where do you come up with this, man?
Guys, I do this for a living. This is my job. Don't get paid for it yet, but it's my job. All right, boys, last week, let's jump right into it. We talked a lot about the NBA and the All-Star break. This week, we're going to talk about a little bit more of a saddening topic here in Toronto. The Toronto Maple Leafs. Of course, a lot of people have been beckoning for the team to break it down, reconstruct. We read last week about the scorched earth rebuilding model that has been approved by Brendan Shanahan. They got that started February 15th, dealing away Cody Franz and Mike Santarelli to the Nashville Predators. Guys, let's keep it simple from the start. What do you guys think of the deal?
Well, AK, I think I'm finally glad to hear from upper management a commitment to a serious rebuild. In Toronto the past, I want to say even decade, we've had a slight commit to a rebuild, couple trades, but realistically, it has not been a rebuild. So, with that breath, I like the trade. I like what they're trying to do, moving some salary, trying to take in picks. Obviously, it's just a start. We'll see where they go with it. Will they flip Jokinen? Will they flip the pick? Will they even flip the prospect they got? Who knows? But it's a good start for sure. If they're going to actually commit to a rebuild, we're going to need first-round draft picks. We're going to need prospects in the deck. And we'll see what they do with it from here.
So, guys, other than Jokinen that they brought in, this Brendan Lysbeck, I want to say his name is, I was just wondering, like, what do you guys think of him? Because, I mean, we know what we're getting with Jokinen.
Yeah, Jokinen's a tried-and-true NHL veteran. He's going to fill a hole on any team, even ours. Realistically, it's not something we need right now. I can see them flipping Jokinen before the deadline or even in the offseason. He won't be around very long. Leipzig, he's a WHL standout for the Portland Winterhawks. We were talking a little bit before the show about how he's put up numbers in the W. The kid had a 49-goal season 2 years ago, so there's some potential there. Whether they see it with the Leafs or not, again, remains to be seen. Kid's already got 3 points in 3 games with the Marlies, so he's got the skill. 5'10", his size, Martin St. Louis-esque, we've heard.
Guys, when you look at Brendan Lysbeck, I think the one factor that scouts have really talked about is that size. Is he going to be able to contribute in the NHL at a top six level? Obviously, since the rules have changed, there's a little bit of a difference here in how smaller players approach the game. Mm-hmm. I think for the Leafs, right now you have a contingent of Dubas and Hunter that have that experience working with the players at the junior level, and I really see their paw prints all over this kind of a move, a guy like Leipzig. People have talked about the 2015 first-round pick being in that 20 to 30 range. It'll vary by how the Predators do in the playoffs. But again, when you have that knowledge of the minor league system, of the OHL, which you didn't have earlier earlier in your development a few years ago, I think it's something that really, really can be an asset to the Leafs, no matter where you're picking. The truth of the matter is, the price that Cody Franzen was going to get, the Leafs weren't going to pay it. They were squeezing him out of deals. For the last few years, he's been getting one-year deals.
Definitely.
Hasn't really, you look at a defenseman of his caliber on the market, a right-handed shot, a guy that puts up points. That money wasn't going to come here with long-term investments in Jake Gardner, Dion Phaneuf. Eventually, you're going to need to have the money to sign Morgan Rielly. The defense as is just terrible. But I think the Leafs made out okay on this deal. Personally, I always thought that Franzen was a little bit underrated in Toronto, especially. I think he was playing out of role a bit as well. Probably not a 1-2 guy, let's be honest, for the defensive skill set that he brings. Is he more of a 3-4? Yes. But in Nashville, he gets that chance now to play behind Shea Weber, behind Roman Josi, alongside Seth Jones. More of a slot where he might fit in.
Yep, for sure. And you know what? Breaking down the deal from a team still in the hunt, you would say Nashville won it hands down. Breaking it down from a team who's now recently committed to a rebuild, it's a little bit more even, but still, you're trading away the youth and the talent there with Franzen and Santarelli. We'll see what happens. The tough thing is Nashville is a very, very good team. That draft pick might be 28th, 29th. Who knows how far they can go. I've been watching them lately. Pekka Rinne's standing on his head. He's looking like he's back to full form after a bunch of injuries. So we'll see how that pans out. Maybe we'll get lucky and they'll bow out in the first round and that pick will be a little bit higher. But for now, I like the move.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, Flip, that I think isn't really noticed by fans is it's a small consolation prize for the AHL team. They get a guy in Leipzig, third in rookie scoring.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in a long time, that Toronto Marlies squad is really using a lot of young players on their team. We see the emergence of Connor Brown down there on the Marlies team. Leipzig adds another dimension, another scorer there, a legitimate prospect to play down on the farm.
That's it.
You don't see these dividends in 1 year, in 2 years,
no.
But down the line, these are things that are really going to pay off for the Toronto Maple Leafs from a developmental standpoint.
And realistically, that's exactly how long this is going to take. If we're talking about turning this team around, stacking the deck with some prospects, building through the draft, it's going to take time. And Toronto fans are going to have to be patient, something I'm sure they're sick of hearing. But you want a real team, it's going to take time.
So I just got a quick question for you guys, because it's obvious you guys are the experts here on hockey.
Thank you, Dwayne.
Dwayne, thank you.
So, yeah, I was just wondering. Now, Flip, you brought up the whole commitment to a rebuild. I was just wondering who in the Leafs management were the ones who, or I guess the person who made that comment, because that's what I'm most interested in.
Well, the thing with the Leafs is over the past decade, much has been made about the mistakes on the ice. But realistically, I think what should be pointed to is the mistakes in the front office.
Okay.
We've had some guys up there, John Ferguson Jr., Cliff Fletcher. I know these guys are hockey minds, but they have not been making the decisions that this team needs going forward. With that being said, Brandon Shanahan's in there now. Kyle Dubas. These are the guys who have come out and said, specifically Brandon Shanahan, that he has the go-ahead from upper management. They're going to be making a rebuild. And these are the kind of guys that I want behind a rebuild. If Cliff Fletcher came out and said he's rebuilding the team, I'm not going to believe it. This is a guy who's offered a crazy deal to Jeff Finger, and I'm pretty sure I just saw Jeff Finger outside of Centennial College shoveling snow. But anyway, I'm happy to hear the front office come out and say they're committed to a rebuild, because that's what it takes. It's going to be top-down.
And, guys, you look at the moves. We're not used to a move like this from the Toronto Maple Leafs acquiring young talent. We look at some of the moves in the past, basically giving away Alexander Steen, not giving him time to grow. You really want to ensure you have that solid foundation. And right now, with Antoine Bebo on the farm as a goaltender prospect, in case one of Bernie Elreimer isn't your goaltender of the future, you have Nylander now developing down there in the Marlies. You have Brown. You have Leipzig. You've seen some of the young guys come up this year and play well. You still have a Morgan Rielly.
Mm-hmm.
This cupboard, it's not bare. You know, there are pieces there. It's going to be, how do you build around that? What are the pieces that you bring in? How committed can you be to understanding that it's a process, to understanding it takes 3-4 years to build this thing up? It's not going to be something that happens overnight. And I think with this current management, especially Dubas, Shanahan, Hunter, you realize you have a staff here that realizes the importance of young players getting in and out of your lineup.
For sure.
Okay, so I guess I have another question for you guys. I was recently checking out the TSN's Top 10 Trade Bait, and I noticed that we have Daniel Winnick, one of the left wingers for the Leafs, on there.
Yep.
I was just wondering, what do you guys think that we could possibly get for him?
Well, first of all, I never associate myself with the Toronto Maple Leafs, so I will say the Toronto Maple Leafs themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point, buddy.
But I will say, when it comes to the trade deadline, you really look at some of the deals that have been made at the past, and we've seen expedited value for players, players that really wouldn't fetch what they fetch until the teams need them. And a guy like Daniel Winnick is someone that helps a lot of squads. You look at Winnipeg, that's been recently mentioned, just trading away Evander Kane. And even though they did acquire Drew Stafford in that deal, they still have a need for help down there if they're going to make it. Daniel Winnick's a guy that you don't need to sell the farm for in order to get. He may cost a second or a third round pick. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, guys like Daniel Winnick, guys like Santarelli, to a lesser extent, maybe even a David Booth or a Trevor Smith. These are players that you are able to get at a lower price. They can fit in your cap. There are guys that, by all accounts, from we know from the outside, fit into the dressing room. And these are players that definitely will draw some interest towards the trade deadline. It's just going to be, what can you get from them? And are you interested in keeping them on your roster past the season?
It's a really good question, Dwayne. And players like Winnick, like AK said, the price tag will be low. He's a role player. He's a depth player. He's someone that, almost like Jokinen to a certain extent, is going to slot into a playoff team who is expecting a deep run. He's going to be there to kill some penalties. He's going to be there to fill up some garbage minutes. And he's going to give you the odd goal here or there. And it's just the type of player that, as much as I like him here in Toronto, we don't need guys like that right now. He's going to slot in somewhere in a West Conference, Western or Eastern Conference competitor and add those minutes. So we'll see what he can do if he does get moved. And if he doesn't get moved, honestly, I like him here to work with the young players. But realistically, I can see him on the move in the next couple of days.
Okay, so coming back to the whole Jokinen deal and when he came over here, he made a pretty interesting comment. He said that the one thing I noticed here, being here 2 days, is a lot of negative energy around here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was after the loss of the Florida Panthers. The 23rd loss out of 27 for the Leafs. Like, what do you guys get from a comment like that? And or is that just something you already knew?
Well, it's good to hear, I guess, coming from a player who's in there and sees it himself. Jokinen's been there for a couple days, and that's his first impression. So clearly, it's resonating from the team. You can see it on their face. The Leafs are the 10th youngest team in the NHL. James Van Riemsdyk is 25 years old. He's been in the league 7 years, but he's only 25 years old. These guys go on any kind of losing streak, let alone 11 games. They're going to be negative.
Right.
There's going to be negative energy around the team, and I think it hit home for me when Kessel was at the All-Star break. They interviewed him, you know, you guys are on a tailspin. How do you feel about it? And he's just defeated. These guys have got to, you know, pull their heads out of their you-know-what and play. As much as I'm sick of hearing them losing, they got to play. Play hard. So.
And honestly, I look at that and I see it's not something that we haven't heard in different ways. Players haven't necessarily come out and said, look, there's a lot of negative energy. But guys like Roman Polak, Stefan Robida, guys that have come from winning programs and understand the value of playing the right way, a lot of them have come out and said, look, we're just not doing the small things that we need to do in order to win.
Yep.
Even Jokinen, he backtracked on it and he said, look, these guys, it's a good group of guys. They're going to play forever. They've got a lot of good years ahead of them. I think he, too, realizes that there are young players on this team. We heard Joffrey Lupul echoing a similar point a few days ago. It's not necessarily about breaking the whole thing completely down. You can't teach winning by losing. If you lose every year, you don't instill the right habits.
Yeah,
that's something that could even hurt your rebuild going forward and hurt your plan. We see it in Edmonton
for sure. And there's no pushback from this team, and that's what kills me the most, is the talent is there in terms of scoring. And you know, players like Morgan Riley, there's upside for days. Even he's come out and called out his teammates, retracted the statement, but still come out. And you got your young defenseman calling out your team on negativity. There's something wrong with the core of this group. And that's why I'm finally happy to hear the Toronto Maple Leafs come out and say they're committed to a rebuild, because realistically at this point, I don't see any other options for this squad. But.
And it's really interesting that Dwayne mentions that, because Peter Horacek came out the next day after the Jokinen comments, and he basically said, look, I feel it too. It's something that really escalated quickly, especially after that first trade was made, that Franz and Santarelli deal. It's something that escalated. You could tell there was sort of a longing wait for that energy to come out with the Leafs. And really, this team just needs to go back to playing hard, doing things that are fun, making hockey fun again, realizing that it is a game. And I was listening to the Fan 590 a couple days ago, and Megan Robinson was doing an update, and she basically said that the Leafs were at practice and they were working on things. They were having fun in the shootout. They were playing drills. Dion Phaneuf was even joking around there. We all know he's been injured for a while now. It's just, it's got to go back to basics. And that's something that I really, really do appreciate out of watching Peter Horacek's style of play. They may not be winning games right now, but in a way, it's taking three steps forward by taking four steps back right now. You may in the future pay a lot of dividends by teaching your young players to play the right way, teaching your young players, look, it's not about cheating. It's about playing hockey the right way, playing good on all ends of the ice, and being able to produce with that pressure added in Toronto.
Okay, so I guess just to wrap up this segment, I was just going to ask you guys, we know that the dealing is not done. I mean, Monday is the trade deadline, this upcoming Monday. I was just wondering if you guys thought that Dion Phaneuf could be on the move.
It's a very good question, Dwayne. Again, you're killing it right now with these questions. But Phaneuf has been, other than Kessel, the lightning rod of controversy for this team since the day he was traded here. I can remember Toronto media praising Brian Burke for the deal that he did, getting rid of the players he did and bringing in Phaneuf.
Spare parts
for Phaneuf. We don't need to touch on that trade too much, but if it wasn't for his massive contract, I would say 100% he's on his way out. He does not fit into this makeup. He doesn't fit into a makeup going forward. As much as I think Dion takes a lot of flack in this town, I think he's an above-average defenseman, not a top two, maybe a top four. I don't think he ever deserved the captaincy, but that's not his fault. All that being said, he's an addition to any team and an upgrade on majority of defensemen, and I do think he will be moved, but that contract is going to hinder it. So we'll see how the boys in the upper management deal with such a high price tag for a player like Phaneuf.
All right, sounds good. Well, I guess we're going to move on to the NBA now.
No more Leaf talk? just getting into it. It's not that sad.
Cue the swish sound. Thank you.
So I guess before we get started, because obviously we know that the biggest news was all the trades that happened on this past Thursday. And I guess I will just want to start off and say that, you know, I wish all the best for Chris Bosch. I guess you guys probably all heard about his season ending because of possible blood clots being found in his lungs. So, you know, we wish him all the best. I know obviously he gets a lot of flack from the Toronto media and the Toronto fans because he left, but, you know, I mean, this is beyond basketball.
For sure.
Really wish him the best. So I guess to start off, we'll just outline the trades, you know, see exactly what happened. And I guess the biggest trades that happened, we had a three-team trade. And the first one, Miami received Goran Dragic and his brother, Zoran Dragic, from Phoenix. New Orleans received Norris Cole from Miami, Justin Hamilton from Miami, and Sean Williams from Miami. And Phoenix ended up getting Danny Granger from Miami, John Salmons, and two first-round picks. Mm. So that's a big one right there. The next one was another three-team trade between the Phoenix Suns, the Milwaukee Bucks.
Dwayne's ready for Florida. We're going to Florida in a couple weeks to cover
some. I think Dwayne's a little thirsty, too. I don't know.
the Milwaukee Bucks and the Philadelphia 76ers. So Phoenix got Brandon Knight. Milwaukee got Michael Carter-Williams, Miles Plumlee, and Tyler Ennis.
MCW!
Oh, man, this was a big one. And Philadelphia, as usual, just stocked up on their draft picks. Another three-team trade between the Detroit Pistons, Oklahoma City Thunder, the Utah Jazz, saw Detroit getting Reggie Jackson. The Oklahoma City Thunder got Enes Kanter, Steve Novak.
Shout out to three-point shooting Steve Novak.
I know. You guys remember when he was with the Raps?
I wish I did.
Novocaine to numb the pain, as Frank Ocean says.
DJ Augustine also went to the Thunder. Kyle Singler was also a member of that trade. Utah got Kendrick Perkins, Grant Jarrett, and the rights to Tiber Pleiss and a draft pick.
A lot of three-team deals.
Creative deals happening right now.
The funny thing is, this all came at the last second. I don't know if you guys noticed that when it was coming down.
What was it, a record 37 players moved on deadline day?
Unbelievable.
It was a flurry of activity. Exciting, though. This is what a trade deadline should look like. NHL, take notes.
Guys, when you look at these deals, and we can go over some of the other big additions, obviously Boston getting Isaiah Thomas in there, Minnesota reuniting with Kevin Garnett, and Andre Miller. Andre Miller's never going to stop playing basketball, I'm convinced, going to Sacramento. Guys, when you look at these deals, what exactly, who won, who lost? There's so many moving parts.
That's a tough question.
You know what? Philadelphia, for me, I mean, I got to start off with them. I really don't really understand the path that they're going on. I understand that they want to, this is a complete tank job, and they want to rebuild with the draft picks, but they had young players there. They had Michael Carter-Williams. They had a KJ McDaniels. I just don't understand why you wouldn't want to build around those kind of guys. I mean, you already have Noel. Embiid is supposed to come back next year. I mean, these are guys that you structure your team around. And I understand them wanting to, you know, collect as many draft picks as possible. But at a certain point, you have to build a team.
Absolutely. You look at that team, they have a lot of young pieces there and just don't know what they are. A lot of them are from the D League.
Right.
KJ McDaniels is a guy, you look at him, he can guard the perimeter. He's a perimeter defender. His offensive game is only growing. It's only starting. To just let him go right now for Isaiah Cannon, who's not a bad point guard, a guy who's stuck in that three slot.
Speaking of Cannon, did you guys see that tip three-pointer he had to end the half against Miami?
Hoo-wee! Man. I like Isaiah Cannon. It's nothing against him. It's just... at some point, when you look at Philadelphia, you look at development, and you just wonder, where are they going?
I don't know.
What exactly are they doing?
And the fact that management is supporting this, I just don't understand.
But guys, going back to the Miami Heat, I really think Goran Dragic is a huge, huge pickup for that team.
Absolutely.
We talked about it last time, Hassan Whiteside being the savior, as much as we joked about it, for the Heat. But to have Dragic there, to have Whiteside, to have Dwayne Wade, if he can, you know, stay healthy. For once, that might be something.
Luol Deng,
absolutely. Look, they don't have Chris Bosh, and that's a big blow. We wish the best for Bosh.
Again, right.
That team is still very, very, very dangerous when I look at them with Dragic coming out there. And one of the best pick-and-roll point guards in the game right now. He's a guy that can help on the offensive end for sure. Right. If you have that rim protector like Whiteside, you can take a bit more of those gambles. They just improved. The whole bottom of the Eastern Conference, I think, improved themselves pretty heavily with this trade deadline.
And I think that's what you touched on there, the bottom of the Eastern Conference. That's a matchup. The top teams in the East might be looking at, even with Bosch going out, that's not a team you really want to go up against. You don't want to go into Miami, a confident team, now adding a guy like Dragic. He's a speedy point guard. He can defend. He can shoot the three. Adds a lot of dimensions to their game that they necessarily did not have before. You know, they had a deep team, relatively deep team, but you don't have a point guard that can move the ball like that. That being said, I think one of the more underrated trades of the day was the Portland Trailblazers picking up Aaron Aflalo.
Huge.
Okay, yeah.
I think that's a really big move for them. They got Alonzo G as well in that deal, I think.
Yep.
Stats can confirm. But I think that's a big pickup for them. That's a role player. That's a depth player. I think that's an underrated team in general. We've talked about underrated teams before. Shout out the Memphis Grizzlies. But I think Portland really struck gold here with this deal. Aflalo, I believe, will come off the bench. But I'm just looking at his numbers here. Past two seasons, he's averaged in 13-14. He averaged 19 points a game. Last season, 15 points a game. That's a solid pickup for them. And just looking at what they gave up. So in this deal, Portland got shooting guard Aaron Aflalo, Alonzo G.
G.
For Will Barton, Victor Claver, Thomas Robinson, and a first round pick.
Poor Thomas Robinson. He's just moving all over.
Thomas
around.
Robinson, this guy was a top pick in the NBA draft.
He was.
Moving around. You know what? I don't know what Denver's plan is. I know they've already waived one of these guys. But Victor Claver, Will Barton, Thomas Robinson, these are young players. They weren't playing in the Portland rotation. They're essentially spare parts for the Trailblazers.
Right.
To give that up and get a guy of Aaron Aflalo, who when the game slows down in the playoffs, you go into half-court sets,
right,
and you're able to just make shots. That's what Aaron Aflalo does. He
Absolutely.
Makes big buckets.
Yep.
And he's okay with coming off the bench. He tweeted, I think it was, it's playoff time when he got traded. So, I mean, you can tell the guy's a competitor.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to go out there. He wants to win. You have a Portland team right now that's sitting with home court advantage.
Right.
They're a dangerous team out there, and to add a weapon like Aaron Aflalo off the bench only strengthens their chances.
They're stacked. And we've already talked about how deep that Western Conference is. They're going for it. So it's going to be exciting to see. When I see teams like that go for it, and like you said, they gave up some young talent, but they didn't have places for them. So Aflalo, G, we'll see what they can do. But that's exciting for sure.
Guys, I want to quickly touch on the Phoenix Suns. This is a team that came in with the three-point guard system in the summer, Isaiah Thomas, Goran Dragic, and Eric Bledsoe.
Right.
When all was said and done and the dust settled at the NBA trade deadline, they were left with Eric Bledsoe and came out acquiring Brandon Knight. What's going on in Phoenix?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I got to start off with Milwaukee. I mean, to think that they were so willing to give up Brandon Knight. I mean, we touched on it last episode where we felt Brandon Knight had reason to be on the All-Star team. So to give up a potential All-Star, it's kind of surprising. But again, with Phoenix, it's interesting because we all thought they were going to revolutionize the league with this three-point guard set that they were going to possibly end games with. But obviously, Dragic wasn't a big fan of it, because I think that was mainly the reason why he ended up requesting the trade out. And we see Isaiah Thomas end up leaving and going to Boston. And now, again, like you said, they're left with Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe in the starting backcourt. So I don't know what I think this is more a move planned for the future. I think they want to develop those two guys and see what they have in them. Because right now, I think, and we're gonna quickly touch on it after, I think that they're almost bowing out of the Western Conference playoff race, because I think they know that they're going to end up losing that 8th spot to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So, again, I think this is a plan that is structured for the future and beyond.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to agree with you. It's got to be a move for the future, because just looking at this Western Conference breakdown and potential first-round matchups, if the playoffs were to start today, you're looking at Golden State versus OKC. You're looking at Memphis versus San Antonio Spurs. You're looking at Houston Rockets versus the LA Clippers. And then to round it out, you have Portland versus Dallas.
Yeah, well, I think when you think of Ryan McDonough, the GM of Phoenix, he's one of those guys that he's really pioneered behind analytics and breaking down matchups. And I think, honestly, although they were tied for that 8th seed with Oklahoma City heading into the deadline, I feel like McDonough realistically knew this is not their year right now to go out and win.
They don't match up against OKC.
Yeah, they're not OKC. OKC right now is just, we talked about it last time, just Westbrook or Durant. If you even have one of them in your lineup, you're bringing out potency. And right now, Phoenix just doesn't have that firepower.
Right.
The problem that I see behind the Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe combination is I don't think they're done necessarily before next season, because none of those guys are true point guards. They're score-first point guards in that system. And you just really got to wonder what exactly they're going to do, how Ryan McDonough is going to maneuver through the system to rebuild that team, I guess revamp that team before next season and contend again for a playoff spot.
Can we just take in for a sec that the Oklahoma City Thunder are the 8th seed?
Well,
wow.
You know what? I mean, the trades that they made, because breaking news, I guess, if you want to say it, but I honestly believe that they won the trade deadline. I think the guys that they brought in, their bench now, if hopefully they get back, you know, Kevin Durant, the reigning MVP, healthy, because the lineup that they could throw out there it's going to be incredible. I mean, Golden State is going to have to start worrying. They're going to have to make sure that they're healthy for that first round matchup. And who knows? I mean, Oklahoma City could get on a roll. They could even move up to 7. You really don't know. I really think that they won this trade. I mean, again, what happened was they sent Reggie Jackson to Detroit.
Detroit basketball.
I'm not sure what that was.
That is the PA announcer in
Thank
Detroit
you.
During their championship years in 2004 with Chauncey Billups.
That's right. Okay, so for Oklahoma City to bring in Enes Kanter, Steve Novak, DJ Augustine, a former Longhorn with Kevin Durant back in his college days, And to have Kyle Singler as well, I mean, that's a really potent offense, and guys that they can just throw out there to defend multiple positions. I really think that they won this draft and or won this the trade deadline, and I really would not want to have to face them in round one.
And guys, let's be honest, Reggie Jackson didn't want to be there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the reaction right after, and Kendrick Perkins was a guy that Durant loved, that team loved, that locker room loved, and Reggie Jackson, I think he woke up and he's like, he tweeted something about God and how he's so happy to be in Detroit.
Right.
And only after that did he tweet, oh, you know, thank you to the Oklahoma City fans and to the organization and whatnot. Russell Westbrook talked about it as well. He's like, look, Reggie's a good guy. We want him to do his thing. But we want people that are going to be here. And really, they've acquired players here. Enes Kanter was stuck behind Rudy Gobert's development in Utah. He wasn't getting any minutes. This is an upgrade on Perkins this year.
He's still young.
Absolutely. He's still very young. Steve Novak has a chance to spread the floor. Kyle Singler has a chance to spread the floor. And DJ Augustin, since he was cut from Toronto last season, has just been phenomenal in Chicago and in Detroit.
He's instant offense.
I think that's the key there. He can be huge for them. We'll see.
And I think the ultimate winner in terms of that deal is Kevin Durant. The guy's coming off the Jones fracture.
Right.
With Phoenix now bowing out at the same deadline, essentially. New Orleans, Pelicans, they don't really have the same firepower with Davis and Drew Holiday out long term. Oklahoma City has a chance here to rest their guys. Let Westbrook carry the load for now heading into the playoffs. Have a healthy Durant at 100% firing.
Oh, boy.
That's a scary team for 1-8 matchup. I don't care who you're facing. You could be playing the champs. You could be playing the... Yeah, man, the Grizzlies defense would have trouble with that kind of a team.
Also important to note with OKC right now, 8-2 in their last 10 on a 6-game win streak. Exciting time for them.
Look out the rest of the NBA.
Guys, one quick point to wrap up this trade deadline talk. Kendrick Perkins, he got dealt to Utah in that deal.
Okay.
He's obviously not a part of their plans. They waived him. The reports are that he signed with the Cavaliers. The Cavs lost Varejao, and since then have picked up Mozgov and now Perkins to shore up their middle.
Right.
Does that make them a better team for this year's playoff run?
They're definitely a better team. Whether or not they're the best team in the East, because that's been the argument. People have been saying, are they now the best team in the East and the team to be feared there? I truly still believe that the Chicago Bulls, if they can get it together and play consistently, I believe that they have the most deep team in the East and would be the best competition for them. I mean, everybody had a Bulls-Cavaliers matchup from the beginning, and it looks like that's where we're headed, Eastern Conference. And Eastern Conference Finals, and, you know, I hate to say that, obviously, knowing that we love and cheer for the Raptors, but I guess speaking of the Raptors, though, they come off of a pretty brutal loss last night against the New Orleans Pelicans. Did you guys watch the game?
Brutal loss.
Brutal. I was working, actually, on my Jason Kidd Coach of the Year piece while I was watching that game.
Can't wait to read it.
See, the thing that gets me with the Raptors is they're going through this toughest month of their season here, February, and the two losses to Milwaukee and Brooklyn, they didn't sit well because I often found that the Raptors were playing down against depleted teams, teams that weren't on their A game. You have four sparkling wins in a row there with the Clippers, San Antonio, Washington, Atlanta. Over that four-game stretch, the Raptors actually played with the best defensive efficiency in the NBA. Clearly, they can defend. They were a top 10 defensive team last season in the association. And then you go into Houston, no Dwight Howard. You get absolutely blown out on the second night of a back-to-back. Pelicans are missing Davis and Holiday. And again, they beat the Raptors. The key quote for me was, and I tweeted it out last night, on January 19th after that loss, Gravis Vasquez said, Alexis Ajengis came in here and beat us. Well, clearly, we don't know the name of the players. Not blaming Gravis there, but I mean, clearly there was some frustration there in how they came out and beat you. And to let Luke Babbitt score 18 points, four triples.
Right, yeah.
It's something that the Raptors have to be aware of heading down the stretch here. They cannot lose focus against these lower-seeded teams because that's clearly who's been giving them the most trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, blowing an 18-point lead, I mean, that's, like you said, to a New Orleans team that's missing Davis and a few other key players, it really is unacceptable. And I'm sure, you know, Coach Dwayne Casey is not going to be happy about that. But, I mean, they have a quick turnaround. I mean, they have the Dallas Mavericks tonight. You know, hopefully we get a better effort because we know how potent their offense is. So, hopefully they're better prepared for the matchup tonight.
Yeah, the good part is when you look at this is they've gone 4-4 now in this stretch. And they have Dallas, and then they have Golden State. They have a little bit of breather after that with the Knicks and the Sixers. So, get through the schedule. The key part is get your guys healthy, run your offense, get your defense back on track. For the most part, it's getting there. It's better.
Right.
Obviously, the Pelicans shot 51% last night, with just not going to cut it over the long haul.
Yep.
But there's signs that they're coming around, and that defensive intensity is not in the bottom third of the league anymore.
I think when you look at the Raps in the past few games, it's important to realize that they're still a young squad. As much as they've had recent success, they're still coming together as a team. Coach Casey is still molding that squad. They come off a huge win against Atlanta and then lay two eggs. So you got to take the good in with the bad with this team. And realistically, I do think that they will be fine down the stretch. It's just concerning when you look at these losses to the Western Conference teams. If you count yourself as a championship caliber team, you're going to have to be going up against these teams in the NBA Finals. And it's, from a Toronto fan perspective, it's got to be worrisome.
Very true, Philip. All right, guys, I want to jump into something a little bit more of a football talk here. We're trying that out for the first time.
The pigskin picks.
Guys, NFL Combine. What are your thoughts? Do you guys watch it? Are you interested in it? Do you care, or is it just whatever? On to the next one.
I'll be honest with you, AK. In the past few seasons, NFL Combine to me is kind of just like whatever, filler for NFL fans to kill the time in the long off season that is the NFL off season. With that being said, the coverage this year of the Combine, I felt really they took it to another level. The NFL Network is doing amazing things to make this stuff interesting. And you also have interesting players in the draft this year. People are always attracted to the quarterback position.
That's right.
You have a great matchup, if you will, a rivalry between the two top-rated quarterbacks this year, Winston from Florida State and Mariota from Oregon. And it was interesting to watch, for sure. I watched it. It's good stuff. Those two guys going up against each other is definitely the most intriguing storyline of the Combine. And we'll get into what you guys think about it in a sec. But personally, I watched them both run the 40-yard dash. they won't beat me out there by any stretch. You know, I'd be dusting them. But they did pretty good. Mariota put Winston to shame. Clearly going to be the more mobile, fleet-of-foot quarterback. Personally, and we'll get into the picks in a sec, if I were NFL GM, and I think it's Tampa with the first overall
pick, right?
Yep. I'm Tampa's GM sitting there right now. Shout out the Bucks. I'm personally going to go with Winston. I think he has more potential upside. Mariota's maybe the safer pick in terms of, you know he doesn't have as much off-field antics as Winston has had. So we'll see. It's interesting. I'd like to actually hear what you guys think about it. You going Winston? You going Mariota? What do you think, Dwayne?
Yeah, I have to agree. I think the public, you know, they cheer for Marcus Mariota. And to be honest, I mean, as an Eagles fan, like, I loved watching him play at Oregon. And obviously we know that's where Chip Kelly was the head coach before he became the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Mm-hmm. So he actually recruited Marcus Mariota to that team. So a lot of people have been saying that, you know, the Eagles are going to try and move up to see if they can draft Mariota. And I think for the Eagles, he's the best quarterback. But I truly do believe that Winston is the better prospect overall. And I think, like you said, he has the higher ceiling. Like, he comes from a pro-style offense from Florida State, whereas, you know, Marcus Mariota, he played that spread system, you know, and it's a hard thing adjusting to the pro-style offense once you get to the NFL.
What I find most interesting about this matchup between these two quarterbacks is differing styles. And watching Winston throw this week, there was some speculation about his arm and whether or not he's been losing velocity on the ball. So there's that. And you also have this kid has come out of a Florida State program that he personally riddled with off-field distractions.
Yeah, we won't get into everything, but we'll just keep it at that.
Yeah, we won't get into it, but in an NFL that has been plagued by off-field antics, there might be a tendency for those teams to consider it a little bit longer, taking a draft pick. Like, so we'll see. It's interesting, though, for sure.
guys, is there a chance we see these guys go 1-2 in the draft? And if you're an NFL GM, is that okay with you?
I think it's 100% possible. I mean, Tampa Bay, their number one need is quarterback. I mean, last year they had Josh McCown, and they had they had the second year starter. I forget his name right now, but they were the quarterbacks of that team. And I mean, mind you, their offensive line was miserable, so it would be hard for any quarterback to succeed mm-hmm. there. But they need a quarterback desperately. I mean, they had high expectations going into the year after hiring Lovie Smith. And, you know, things just really fell flat because obviously they're drafting number one.
Yep.
So I think they have to go quarterback number one.
Yeah, and then you got Tennessee at number two.
Right. And so they need a quarterback as well.
Heavy. They in the same breath, Tennessee's been going through starting quarterback draft picks like it's going out of style. You know, Jake Locker didn't work out. He fizzled. So you know Tennessee is going for a quarterback. So to answer your question, AK, I would bet money that they go 1-2.
Guys, I still remember the Kerry Collins era.
Ouch.
Back in the day. Ooh. So, I mean, definitely when I think of Tennessee, I'm like, okay, they could definitely use a stable quarterback there for a few years down there. All right, I want to move on a little bit to the most impressive moment of the combine. Obviously, not everyone puts too much into these drills, but damn, there was something very, very impressive yesterday, and I'll let Dwayne get into that.
Yeah, you know what? To me, what we've seen some impressive things. Obviously, the highlight of the combine sometimes is the 40-yard dash. People love to see how fast these guys can run, and Flip mentioned it. Mariota had an impressive 40-yard dash. But to me, the highlight had to be
Byron 60.
Yeah, Byron Jones from Connecticut, the defensive back. I mean, he put on a show yesterday. I mean, what he did, he had a broad jump that, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, 12 feet, 3 inches?
12 feet, 3 inches. His personal record was 11-7. Quote, "It feels good to put a personal record up," is what we got from Jones after that.
Well, I mean, not even a personal record. We're talking a world record. Like, his name is now in the Guinness Book.
Yeah, and, you know, we earlier before the show, we were talking about the combine, and these kids are really impressing. And as much as, you know, for most sports fans, you're watching guys run around on the field and do track and field stuff, this is impressive stuff. These guys are top flight athletes, and just looking at, you know, you can't come into the NFL and not bring your A game. These kids are not messing around. They know that the potential is there for them to make a career out of it. And it's, you know, we're not even at the draft yet, and these kids are performing. So I think it bodes well going forward for the NFL. It bodes well for NFL fans because these kids are exciting. And just for the game of football overall, it's going to improve the quality. So hopefully they can translate it onto the field.
Oh, and, you know, just to add to what he did, I mean, he only jumped 44.5 inches for his vertical jump. I mean, nothing special, right, guys?
I think I could hit 45. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I can dunk a 10-foot net, but, I mean, actually, Fisher-Price net, four feet, probably be more likely. But, I mean, and that, you know, you guys bring up a good point. It comes with the increased coverage with the NFL Network doing this.
They do it right.
Yeah, they do it right. And we've seen it with a lot of sports as well. We've seen the MLB now, they cover international games on MLB Network.
Right,
but
right.
The fact that even USA Track and Field took notice, they tweeted it out as well. These are things that are, they're special moments, and they're moments for a lot of these kids that, even the ones that don't make it, if they have these special moments at the combine, it's something special for them that they'll remember for the rest of their life.
And, you know, we talk about the coverage. I think we would be remiss not to give some love to Rich Eisen and Mike Mayock, the guys who were hosting the combine throughout the weekend. They did an incredible job. And Mike Mayock, I mean, if you guys don't follow him and are NFL fans, then you're making a mistake because he knows his football.
Yeah, and you know what, just to off of what you said, to recommend to the non-diehard NFL fans, if you're not on the NFL Network already, please do yourself a favor and check out that channel because they're putting the other major three sporting leagues to shame. The NFL Network is fun to watch, and I highly suggest checking that out.
Shout out Rodgers, Coach Go Bell. Whoever you're with, get on that ASAP. Last thing, 30 seconds before we wrap it up. Dwayne, give us the lowdown on UEFA Champions League today. Winners, losers, picks, bang.
All right, so for today we've got Man City and Barcelona playing in the first leg, and we have Juventus and Dortmund playing. So I think I'm pretty sure that we're going to see a win here by Barcelona. Man City, they have a potent offense, but I just don't know if they're going to be able to contain Lionel Messi, Luis Suarez, Neymar. That's tough for any team. And for Juventus and Dortmund, Dortmund is having a really, really rough year. So I'm going to say Juventus takes this one handedly.
And you know what? To quickly touch on the Man City-Barca matchup, which to me is personally the more intriguing of the two. Man City's been playing better in the BPL, but I do not think well enough to go up against the powerhouse that is Barca. That team is obviously stacked, deep, and with the players you just mentioned, they're not going to lose to Man City. I'm on record. Barca by 2 goals.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
All right, people, that's all for this week. We gave you a little bit of a long show. We know you missed us during reading week. We'll be back next week, and we'll give you a full spring training primer and preview of everything going on in the baseball world. Don't worry, you can come to Florida with us in our hearts. Take care, everyone. Sports from the Six, Ali Khan Rivjani, Dwayne Turner, and Flip Livingston, signing out.